Wake up with the news and information you can trust. This is the Andy Griffin Show on News Radio 890, 92.5 KDXU, Southern Utah's news talk leader.
Hey, welcome back, or welcome to the show, I should say. Andy Griffin here. It's 908 on KDXU. Zach Renstrom, the Washington County Water Conservancy District General Manager, is here. Hi, Zach. How you doing, man?
Good morning.
Good to see you. Appreciate you coming in, man.
It's always fun to be here.
Okay, sure. Has it got the, that is like a tweed. Is that tweed or wool? Nice jacket, man.
You'd have to ask my wife.
I was talking with Jack Lancaster the other day. I'm like, hey, that's a sweet looking shirt. He goes, I just wear what my wife tells me to wear. I don't know. I just do what she says. And
happy wife, happy marriage, happy life type thing. Yeah.
Somebody told me happy spouse, happy house. And I kind of like that one better. That means we get to be happy too, Zach.
Well,
it's not real, but is it? You know what's funny is I hear that a lot as far as the guys and what they wear. My brother, my sister and brother-in-law, he wears exactly what she tells him to wear all the time. My wife has never once in our whole lives laid my clothes out for me or told me what to wear. So if I dress badly, it's my fault.
So I will say my wife doesn't lay my clothes out, but she kind of helps. And every once in a while, she's like, no, Zach, you really need to change. Like, go put this.
That ain't gonna work. But yeah. I have heard that one before, honey. That looks kind of clash. Yeah. So.
And I just like, okay. She has better taste. She obviously has good taste because she married me, right?
Well, despite that. I've come out in an outfit, and my wife's those clash. I'm like, but they're both green, and she's like, yeah, but they're not the same green. I'm like, well, isn't that good? You can have two. She's like, no, they're too close to. So I guess you can wear two shades of green if they're very different colors of green. But if they're close to the same but don't match, then that's not good.
Yep.
So we learn these things as we get older. So we should probably lay down odds on what time Carrie will show up. What time do you think she's usually here? Right about now, right when we get the show started. I'm looking at the front door. She's not here yet. So
we do have another event going on where I have to be interviewed, and so she might be prepping for that.
I see. Okay. So some big shot reporters going to talk to you when we're done here.
They're all big shot reporters. And so I mean, part of my job, and I think this is very important, is whenever anybody from the press or podcasts or anything they want to talk, I always try to make myself available.
That's very cool.
Because I think it's very, very important to just share everything. Just be as transparent, let people come in, ask any questions, show them all our studies, everything. So if anybody wants to know anything that's going on, it's just like, well, here it is. And radio and the press, of course, is a very important way to communicate what's going on.
Well, you've always been very open and honest and transparent here on the show. Appreciate that. For those that don't know our history, Zach took over. What was the date that you became the guy at the Water Conservancy District when Ron retired?
January 1st, 2020.
So I had been on the job 1 year.
Yep.
At that point, here doing this particular job. And there's Carrie, by the way. So if you had 9/11 in the pool, you just won. Anyway, I've been on the job 1 year. Now here we are, 5.5, almost 6 years later, and I'm retiring. Zach is not yet. He's too young.
Yeah, I got 15 more years, hopefully.
Okay. Well, I actually had 3 years. I was going to retire when I was 63, and I meet with my retirement folks, and the guy said, what are you waiting for? I said, I don't know. I got a cool job. I like my job. And he goes, yeah, do you like your job more than you like your wife? Or love your job more than you love your wife? I'm like, no. And then he goes, okay, then retire. So, but I've also had a few challenging health things crop up. And so I just got to take care of business, man.
So I have a good friend. Mm-hmm. He's actually, his wife came to him and said, hey, he's actually in his 70s. And his wife went to him and says, hey, I'd like you to retire. And he says, well, the day that you can start living on a budget, I'll retire. And she's like, well, I guess you're not retiring anytime soon, huh? So he's still working in his
reality, huh? That's understandable. And we're at the point where we can financially, we can do it. And,
well, good
and
for you guys. Fine,
but, it's going to be a new adventure. And a lot of I'm sure Ron went through this, all the things you want to do. And then, but the reality is, you might want to go on a mission or go on vacation, go on a cruise, whatever it is, but there's still the reality of every single day. What are you going to do when you get up in the morning? And if you've had a job like you and I have our whole lives, that you get up and you go to work, Mm-hmm. It's kind of a weird, sobering thought to say, I don't have to get up and go anywhere. It's strange.
I've never experienced that. Maybe, yeah. I mean, on a vacation a little bit, but yeah, even as a young kid,
the same, yeah.
I was out either working on the dairy farm or my neighbor's ranch or in our, yeah, I just, so that would be a weird feeling.
Even I remember when I was a sports writer for years and years, Zach, my job, I'd work till 2 or 3 in the morning. And when morning came, when time to get up came, like at 8 o'clock or whatever, I'd feel guilty if I didn't get up. Even though I'd been up till 2 or 3 in the morning, I'd feel guilty because, well, it's time to start today and get to work. Mm-hmm. It was a strange thing. So.
Well, you'll have to tell us how it's going.
I will definitely report in. The news as far as my replacement is, we don't have one yet. They have a couple of people in mind, but the boss is having some medical things too, and so we're kind of on hold right now. But yeah, here we are. Okay, enough about that. Let's talk about water, shall we? I wish I could remember where it was, but I read just the other day. I read that there was a town, I think in Utah, but maybe somewhere, maybe Idaho, that said, we're not building anymore. Water is such a rare commodity here that we're stopping. No more building permits. Zach, you've always said that's not your job, number one, to tell people they can't build anymore. But at number two, you're like, we hope it never comes to that. What are your thoughts when you hear something like that?
So there are several towns in Utah that are looking at that. They're generally smaller towns, but you have, like areas around Phoenix where people have invested significant funds.
Yeah.
And they basically can't build any homes. And so it's kind of weird that you go to these areas. The one area I'm thinking in particular, someone spent, you know, probably $50 million to build this bridge across this little wash. They have roads and there's no houses. And I don't think there'll ever be houses built in that area. And so these people went bankrupt. Yeah, it's just a scenario that is, from an economic standpoint, very, very troubling. I mean, even in our community, you know, right now, a lot of people are very tired of growth. Right. And we've had a lot. But that's the number one. It's funny because we'll put out something on our social media just saying, hey, come to the Scarecrow Walk up at the Desert Gardens. And people will be like, we hate growth. We hate growth.
And, wait a minute. No, yeah. We're talking. That doesn't even, yeah.
And a lot of times they come to us saying, hey, you need to stop or control growth. And I always make sure, I'm very adamant that it is not my job to do anything about that. That is elected officials at the city council level that make the determination how fast the city grows or how they grow or what type of housing, all that. My job is only to basically make sure that we have safe, reliable drinking water. And so we don't promote growth. We don't discourage growth. We just simply respond to that. But I will say, on a personal level, I've got 3 kids, and I need 3 building permits here in about 5 years. Mm-hmm. And so it's a very tough argument. And, you know, you hear this rhetoric of like, well, we just should shut those people from California from coming up here. We just can't do that.
Yeah. How exactly would you do that then? Would you, okay, there's a sign right there when you enter town that says no Californians, or, I mean, you can't do that. It's America.
30% of our economy is based on construction-related jobs.
Yeah.
And so if all that went away, that would have a huge economic downturn. And so what I do is I just stay in my appropriate lane, which is make sure that we have safe, reliable drinking water, not only today, but that our children have safe, reliable drinking water. And, you know, we look out to 2070 and think about how will we make sure our grandchildren have safe, reliable drinking water and what we can do for them.
Does the mandate, though, from the cities and the county that, hey, make sure we have water, does it ever seem like an impossible task to you? I mean, obviously, your whole job is to make sure it's not impossible, but do you ever go sometimes, man, this is tough.
Oh, all the time. I lose sleep over it. I wake up.
And, don't lose sleep, Zach. Come on. You're going to lose your hair.
I am losing my hair. you know, one of the things I like to do is I go trail running. And so I'll just get on that trail. And, like, it's funny because I'll start thinking about this and what we can do and how to do it and the best way to approach it. And all of a sudden I'll look up and, you know, I've ran 8 miles.
Yeah.
And
believe me, I wouldn't do that, but I would be on the ground dying, me and Carrie, right? Yeah. But he's run 8 miles.
Okay. But one thing that I feel very fortunate is we live in a very, very great community, where our elected leaders here, they don't stick their heads in their sand and just try to ignore problems. They talk about it, and they're also not just thinking about the next election cycle. I've heard, and I've had several conversations about people that are currently running for either city council or mayor, where I've had really good discussions, and they're not worried about just what's going to happen in a month from now. They'll talk to me about their kids and their grandkids, and what are we going to do in 50 years? And so I feel so fortunate that I live in a community where the whole community and our elected leaders actually think about the future, just past their political careers, but literally what is this community and how this community is going to be shaped, and what's going to happen 50 years from now. And so they've been excellent to work with.
So do you believe, Zach, there will ever be a time where you have to kind of do the, you know, Chicken Little, the sky is falling, we need to stop building? Do you think that'll ever happen?
Yes. Yeah. So, I mean, I go to them and I just say, listen, we only have so much water. This is our bucket of water that we can do. Our job as from the water district is we try to do as much we can to expand that bucket. And so that's where we reuse and building reservoirs and all that other stuff. But there's only so much water. So I go to these elected leaders and say, what do you want to do with this water that's remaining? And you know, they throw out ideas and thoughts. Like, one of the things that comes up a lot right now is data centers, because data centers use a lot of water. And the question is, okay, if a large data center came into this community, so right now we have a 20-year plan, okay. One large data center could come in and take 5 years off that plan immediately.
Wow.
Because that's how much water they use. And so I don't...
What would be a data center? What do you mean by data center? Are you talking about like call centers or
AI, computers.
Okay.
And so it's kind of one of those things. It's like, okay, if you as elected leaders want a data center, that's cool. I will work my hardest to make sure that happens.
Right.
But then this is the consequence from it, that we don't have a 20-year plan, we have a 15-year plan. And so they talk about that. And there's economic advantages to having a data center. Our golf courses, I hear that a lot. You know, there's economic aspects to our golf courses. People come here, they play on it, they enjoy it, and there's all that stuff. And so my job is just basically say, this is how much water we have, and if you choose this path or this path or this path, this is what we can do with it. And then we talk about it and have debates about it. And it's actually very, very healthy. And the debates we have, though, like I said, really, it's just not self-serving. These elected leaders are not thinking about, you know, to the 1st of November right now. They really do talk about future. They talk about our community will look like. They talk about all this stuff and how to respond to that.
That is actually really good to hear, because I think there's a lot, you know, people like to criticize public officials, and you know, that whatever, it is what it is. But these public officials, to know that they are actually thinking about not, you know, their term, not till 2028 or till 2032. Mm-hmm. They're thinking about 2050 and 2070 and, you know, years down the road, because we're in trouble if they don't, right?
Yeah. And I spent a lot of time around politicians, just not locally, but across the state of Utah and nationally. And I can tell you that is not the general rule. Most of these politicians are literally just thinking till their next election or what could happen here. And I think that is one of the reasons. So when you see these, you know, statistics say, what's the best state to open a business in? Which state is the most economically, financially sound? All these things, Utah usually comes on top of those lists, if not, you know, at least the top 10. And I think it's a lot of it that way. Like, you know, we have a rainy day fund here in the state of Utah. A lot of states don't do that. They blow every single dime. They have no savings.
Go into debt.
Yeah. If economic downturns happen, it's just really bad. But Utah has done a phenomenal job at building it up and having that rainy day fund and just being wise. So that's one of the reasons why I live in this state.
We're glad you're here.
Well, thanks.
We appreciate you and other leaders, you know, just looking at the future and going, okay, how are we going to do this? It sometimes seems to me like a very daunting matrix or daunting algebraic problem to solve. And I'm glad there are people like you out there doing it.
Well, thanks.
Okay, it can't be easy, I know, sometimes. But okay, I wanted to ask you, yesterday Adam Snow was on.
Uh-huh.
Obviously, you and Adam worked together. He's a county commissioner. But we were talking a little bit about the Northern Corridor and what would come with the Northern Corridor if it does finally get passed. And I'm curious about we call it infrastructure, the underground stuff, the stuff that would come. Would there be then water? Would that be part of it too?
No.
No.
Yeah. Okay. So we already have a large pipeline that goes along the Red Cliffs Parkway. And so that's... pipeline is basically taking care of all our needs.
Red Cliffs or the Red Hills?
Red Hills.
Yeah,
yeah, sorry.
Okay. Yeah, no. I did that for a long time.
Red Hills.
Which one is it? Okay.
And so when we mapped out everything, we don't need any additional capacity to get water to flowing that way. So, yeah, the Northern Corridor, we wouldn't have any pipes underneath it. Since the Northern Corridor, I mean, it's just a roadway, so there's no additional housing that will be built along the corridor. When we look at it, we're like, hey, this is just not... This doesn't affect us or water in any way, and so we just haven't been involved in it.
I think there's some confusion too. A lot of people, oh, there's going to be Mavericks and and gas station, whatever. No, it's a road. That's it. Yeah. Nothing else.
So. The only aspect that we've been involved in that is the one proposal was to take the existing road and make it like a three-way highway and a few other things, and so we have the Desert Garden there, and. The one proposal...
We don't like that proposal, by the way. Not at all.
Well, it would destroy the Desert Garden in a lot of ways. And so part of that is one of the reasons why we built the Desert Garden up there is we want to do a couple things. First of all, we wanted to show people could have lush, green, beautiful landscaping with very little water. And they go up there and they can scan the little codes and see the tree, like the plants and stuff. But also, we have a mandate that we have to educate the public about our fish in the river. And so that's one of the reasons why we have that little fish tank up there that people can read the little write-ups about the fish and what we do, because that's part of what we have to do for our mitigation from the U.S. Fish and Wildlife. And so if they built that, it would just really hurt the Desert Garden. And so that was the only time we really got involved in the Northern Corridor discussion, as we said, this proposal will hurt, if not destroy, the Desert Gardens.
Now, your offices are right up there, too. Would it affect those at all?
It would. It affects some of our parking and how people get in and out of the building. It wouldn't be fun, but I'm more worried about what it would do to that Desert Garden. And, right now I should advertise that we have the Halloween scarecrow walk going on.
My wife and I are going to head up there. We haven't decided what day yet. I think going on Halloween night is probably a bad idea because everyone's going to be there.
Yeah, it's a very popular date night. I will tell you that on Halloween. Businesses have been great because, all the scarecrows and stuff, they're sponsored. And it's been just a phenomenal thing. And then, of course, we'll have the Christmas lights.
Yeah.
We have the duck derby races going on all the time. And so it's just been this thing that... people really have enjoyed, and they come up there a lot. And so to see that a proposal could really destroy that would be very unfortunate.
I think so, too. Yeah, I forget what news outlet it was, but they wrote a story about the Desert Gardens recently. And I was like, yeah, that's pretty cool that they would highlight it. And they called it a secret or a hidden gem or something like that? I'm like, well, I don't know where they've been because we've talked about it 100 times on the show. But I guess some people still haven't heard of it. But
And we're looking to the east side of the county to build something similar on our east side. We're looking at several different parcels, and hopefully we'll be able to select one and do something on the east side of the county. Would be really cool.
Building it might be a little expensive. Getting the land will be a lot expensive.
We're working with some developers, cause they realize it's an asset. And so we're working with some developers, and they've been really good to work with. And so now we're just kind of going through that process of trying to select which one would be the best.
Yeah. I hope it works out. Like I said, Desert Garden, it's for those that haven't been there. I mean, you have basically, if you're Red Hills Parkway, you've got the Sugarloaf or the Dixie Rock with the newcomers. And that's pretty cool. But then this Desert Gardens is a whole added dimension. You could actually spend quite a bit of time. I think there's a trail up there as well.
Yeah.
Pioneer Trail or something like that. I forget what it's
the trailhead to a lot of trails up there. Yeah. T-Bone Mesa. And
so have you run up there, Zach?
I do.
Do you? Yeah.
Nice. Yeah.
I can't. I'm just trying to get over him saying, yeah, before I know it, I've run 8 miles and didn't realize it. I'm like, do you know what the average person trying to run 8 miles, you know what would happen to most of us? We would be passed out. We would
but
be.
That's why I'm so scared.
Vultures would be picking at our bones if we tried to run 8 miles. We just had the marathon here in town, and I've told people many times, I covered the marathon for many years as a sports writer and a sports broadcaster, and I can tell you, when you're at the finish line, it is so inspirational, and as you speak to these runners who just did what they did, you walk away from it there, you're like, I am going to do this next year, man, I am, and then Monday comes, and you go out running, and after about, 500 yards, you're like, you realize, I'm not going to do that, you're Zach.
No, that's how I really got into running was I didn't even know it. I went to the St. George Marathon finish with my little kids and I was towards the end of the group. So these are like 5.5 hour people. And they were barely walking, and I saw the look in their faces. They crossed that finish line, and
amazing,
the tears and the crying. And I went home to my wife, and I said, hey, I'm going to do this marathon thing. She's like, you're nuts. And now she's she's done a lot, and I've done a lot, and we've just enjoyed it.
Hey, you finished the St. George Marathon?
Yeah, I think I've done it like 13 times now.
13? Wow, well, I didn't know. I figured you'd done it a couple of times, but I didn't know you'd done it 13 times.
Well, no. It's just right. It's one of the best marathons I've ever done. Yeah, like it's the city of St. George does a phenomenal. It's the reason why it's like ranked as one of the best marathons, and it's going to be the 50th anniversary next year.
That's right. Big
and
party.
So yeah. It should be a lot of fun. So I'll be hopefully. I'm getting older, so it's just a matter of time too before for something gives out. So,
did you ever get fast enough to qualify for the Boston?
Oh no, but I don't. You're going to get me off, but I don't run for time. I will stop and have a popsicle. I will stop and talk to people. Where my wife is, she's got
focused,
her
laser focus.
She's got her watch on. So she's gone to Boston several times, but I have no like that would destroy the experience for me. Mm. I just want to go out and have fun.
Makes sense. But so. My wife and I, when we play pickleball, have very different goals. My goal is to win. Her goal is to exercise and have fun.
Yeah.
And I'm like, she's like, did you have fun? I said, we lost. She said, yeah, but it wasn't fun. I said, no, we lost. It was not fun. We lost. And so, yeah, she's a lot like you. I guess, a lot like your wife when it comes to that kind of thing.
So I saw this at my son's soccer game where some lady had on her shirt says, well, as long as both teams had fun. And so your wife should get you that shirt.
I hope there was some kind of tongue-in-cheek involved with that shirt.
I don't know why that lady had it on.
Trophy or something.
I thought it was hilarious.
Yeah, okay. Well, Zach, we've got to get a weather break in, and we'll talk some more when we come back about what the future here with the water situation, the drought that we are still in, despite the rain we had here and there. We'll talk about that more when we come back.
All the latest news, weather, traffic, and sports, just like you like them. You're waking up with the Andy Griffin Show on News Radio 890, 92.5 KDXU, Southern Utah's news talk leader.
It's a Wednesday. In fact, it is the fourth Wednesday, right, Zach? Is that what it is?
That's why I'm here.
Fourth Wednesday of the month being the 22nd, so you got the first is the seventh. I mean, the seventh, yeah, anyway, yeah, it's the fourth week. Anyway, Zach, thanks for coming in. Appreciate you being here, man.
Yes, it's good to be here.
We are talking water a little bit, and everybody's like, well, the drought is over. You know, we had a couple of pretty good storms. Today, even, it's supposed to be scattered showers. And, Zach, when you average 8 or 9 inches a year and you're only at 4, the drought is not over, not by a long shot.
Yeah, and it's part of living in the desert. We have a lot of variability in our rainfall, and you know sometimes it comes really, we get a lot, and we have floods, and then it doesn't. And so all this other things, and so that's one of the reasons why we have to build these large reservoirs. So when it's good, we'll capture it and keep it as much as we can, and then when we have those really dry times, and so like this year, you know, it was one of the top 10 driest years ever recorded, but yeah, everybody had plenty of drinking water. People were able to, you know, keep the parks, city parks going, everything. Our farmers did get hit pretty hard, and it's just because we build these large, expensive water infrastructure projects. And so even with these little storms that have come through, that's called, well, unfortunately up in Pine Valley, they got hit pretty hard, but we try to capture every single drop we can from when those storms come through. And the best thing about these recent storms that is so crucial is our soil moisture content was so poor. It was really bad. And so now we've got some actually good moisture in the soil. So now if it does snow, we'll be able to actually have that water drain and get into our reservoirs. And so I was very happy about it. I always like it when we get that rain. But the nice thing is we really did get those soil moisture contents up these last storms.
My dad is a meteorologist or was for a lot of his career. Do you feel like you've become sort of a meteorologist trying to watch the storms and predict what they're going to do and stuff? Is that part of your...
No, I don't, because I'm always wrong.
Well, so are weathermen, at least half the time anyway.
I do look at the charts. I do look at all that. The office, we look at that because we change how we operate certain things based on if we think we're going to get a rainstorm or not. And so, yeah, we try to adapt to that. But I have noticed that the 3-day forecast is usually pretty darn good.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. They've become amazingly accurate. Yeah.
And so that's what we kind of, and so then I, you know, like this winter coming up, I look at the forecast And I think, well, that'd be nice, but I don't necessarily count on it. We're always a little bit pessimistic that we always kind of assume that we're going to have a really hard drought, or we're preparing for a bad drought. But then we, of course, pray and hope for
the best, prepare for the worst, right?
Yeah.
Like my dad used to. I remember one weather broadcast. He got the old Farmer's Almanac out and said, "See this farmer," and then he threw it over his shoulder. He said, "That's what it's worth, pretty much, as far as predicting the weather." Kind of true. So
yeah.
How about New Harmony the other day? The other day, it's been about 2 weeks now, but New Harmony got 5 inches in 1 day. They get normally 9 or 10 a year. They got 5 in 1 day. Yeah. How does that affect? I mean, New Harmony is in Washington County. How does that affect your job and your water watching?
So, like with that storm, we have Ash Creek Reservoir,
mm-hmm.
and so a lot of that runoff went into Ash Creek Reservoir. And so, you know, just yesterday I was driving by it, and there's water sitting in that reservoir.
Wow, which it's been pretty dry lately.
Yeah, and so it's great to see that reservoir fill up. That means the soil moisture content got to the point where that water can run off. And so that's just a positive sign. If Chief Toker was finished, it's not yet, but we would bring all that water sitting in Ash Creek Reservoir and actually would have brought it. We would have let it sit up in that reservoir and kind of desilt a little bit and then brought all that water down to Chief Toker. And so, like, if that same event happened and we had all this infrastructure in place that we're hoping for, that would have been a great storm to fill up Chief Toker.
Could have filled that bad boy up in a hurry, huh?
Yeah, and then, see, this is where it gets very dynamic. If Chief Toker's full of water, which would be awesome, then we can start diverting certain other water, basically taking water that would have gone to those communities. And now that their needs are met, we could start shifting that water and start putting more water into, like, Sand Hollow Reservoir or Tokerville. So there's all these dynamics we can start doing, and that's the one thing in our community is what happens in Ivins affects Tokerville or vice versa. They are all connected. It's the same water. And so if Ivins City is doing something, it is going to affect, let's say, the east side of the county. And that's one of the reasons why we get the mayors and the city managers and their public works directors together multiple times a year. To discuss these water things, because it's just not one city doing their own thing. It really does affect everything. And so,
Tell us a little bit about the water board. You mentioned some of the leaders of local cities. Some of them are also on the water board, right? Mm-hmm. What's the makeup of that, and how do you end up getting on the water board?
So it's they try to find a very diverse group of people. So we have ranchers, we have people up in enterprise, kind of out in the outlying areas. We do have a couple mayors right now, but like Rick Rosenberg, he's the mayor of Santa Clara. Right. He was just appointed. So, you know, and then
he's a smart soil guy too.
Oh, yeah.
So that
Rick's,
helps.
Rick's very smart. And he's a great engineer, but you know, he's not running for re-election. And so, even though he won't be mayor, he'll stay on our board. And I assume that he'll be there hopefully for at least 2 terms. And so they just kind of reach out and kind of look and say, okay, we try to get a diversification of the county. That's one of the reasons, like, we have somebody from enterprise. They also look for people that kind of have an understanding of infrastructure and maybe people that have been involved politically before that. It's kind of a tough balancing act. Most of the other large water districts, the governor appoints their boards with some local input. We were kind of fortunate that we were able to keep it a little bit more local here on who we get to select and just not going to the governor's office. And so that's what they kind of try to do is just a little bit of a balance of...
So who does select the board then?
The county commissioners.
The commissioners.
Yeah, and now Utah Code has some rules related to what they can and can't do. Like we have to have somebody from the agriculture community. And so we have Ed Burgess on our board who... the nice thing with Ed is he kind of straddles a couple things. He's a big rancher, he does a lot of ranching and farming, but he's also been involved in developments and construction. And so they kind of look at that like, okay, here's somebody that can represent ag very well and understand it. He's a farmer, so farmers understand water probably better than anybody, but he's also in the development community, and so he kind of brings multiple things to that, and his family's done a lot for this community. So yeah, it's just kind of a balance.
When I was a young man, I was in the orchestra pit for the play Oklahoma, and one of the songs was "The Farmer and the Cowman Can Be Friends." And I was thinking, in this case, the farmer and the developer can be friends.
Yeah,
Since he's both.
So, yeah. That's cool. It's interesting because it is a board whenever there's an opening, they get a ton of applicants. I mean, it's a lot.
Really?
And there's really, like, because people come to me and say, hey, I want to be on the board. And I have no say. All we do is we tell the county we need two more, or these terms are expiring. And so there's a lot of really good people that apply to, really, really good people. They usually interview a handful of them and kind of go through a selection process and try to select who could possibly be on there. And it's some boards at the county level that you're begging people, begging people to be on it. But on the water board, it's very typical for water boards in the Western United States that there's a little bit more. Up north, I've heard of threats of, like, when somebody didn't get on, they were going to sue. And luckily, we've always been really good about that. But I think part of it is our board. Like, anybody can come to our board meetings. We allow the chairman, he allows anybody to kind of give inputs or thoughts and talk. And we spend a lot of time reaching out to everybody, saying, this is what we're going to do. If you have any ideas, like, reach out to us. So we try to be as open as we can. So it's kind of like, okay, if somebody says, I want to be on your board, my first question is what would you like to see happen? Like, what is there something that you want to see happen? Do you want to see that? And so, like, we have a lot of environmental groups that are very adamant that they should be on my board.
Yeah.
Oh, they are, like, adamant. Yeah. They're like, we should be on your board. And I was like, well, let's talk about why. And they're like, well, the fish. And I was like, okay, let's talk about the fish. So it's a tough one.
Yeah. How often does the board meet? Is it once a month or a quarterly? Or
generally once a month.
Okay.
So I can't think of a month that we have gone where we didn't meet. And so sometimes we'll meet twice. Every once in a while an issue will pop up. Let's say a bid comes up or something like that we have to respond to. So we'll have special board meetings every once in a while. But they're all noticed. So we have to put it on the public website saying 24-hour notice saying these are the items we're going to be discussing.
Is that Carrie's job?
No, it's not.
No?
No.
Yes, it is.
No, it's not. So our board has a secretary that's separate from me. And so she's the one that makes sure it gets put on the public notice website. We say what we're going to talk about. We can't talk about anything that's not on that list. The rules are pretty, well, the Utah State Laws, Open Meetings Act is pretty strict about that, which is a good thing. And so we have a lot of people, like we have this one individual that comes to our board meeting, never said anything. I always go up and introduce myself, and they're just like, I just want to know what's going on. And so
we should tell them to listen to the radio too, right?
I should.
Yeah.
I haven't asked that person. Yeah.
Every fourth Wednesday of every month.
The transparency to us is extremely important.
Well, and I agree, and I really believe you guys have done a good job of that. I mean, you have a great media relations person.
We do.
Sitting over there that, and you know, you've never, like, I don't ever feel like I've had you in, Zach, and you're, well, I don't really want to talk about that, or, I mean, I don't think you've ever said that to me. Yeah, let's not talk about that, or let's leave this part out, or whatever. You're like, okay, let's take the bull by the horns, let's get it.
Unless it's HR issues, I try to be very, very open.
Well, and that one you can get sued over, so you probably shouldn't talk about that kind of thing. So, by the way, though, can you hire me? I'm going to be out of work here pretty soon. I'm just kidding. We'll take a commercial break. When we come back, we'll get a reservoir update. What's coming? What's here? What's almost here? And we'll probably ask about Warner Valley again when we come back.
Wake up with the news and information you can trust. This is the Andy Griffin Show on News Radio 890, 92.5 KDXU, Southern Utah's news talk leader.
9:48 on this Wednesday morning, the 22nd day of October. I'm Andy Griffin. Zach Renstrom is here as well as Carrie Rafke, although she will only turn on her microphone, will let me turn on her microphone if Zach's not here. So, Carrie, all right, let's hear from Carrie. What's up?
Well, I just want to tell you all about Mr. Renstrom. No, I'm just kidding. He's amazing.
And by the way, pay raises are coming up.
Yeah. Soon, so we talked about that.
Yeah, so. Carrie, thanks for coming every week. I know we don't get to hear from you as often, but we appreciate
it. And we're sure going to miss you.
Well, thank you, Carrie. I appreciate that. Zach, it's time for a reservoir update, right? Okay, we'll start with the one that's, we hope, almost done or getting there anyway, Chief Toker. Update us on what's happening there.
So we're going along. Our contractor on that was doing an amazing job, and these rainstorms set us back a couple weeks.
Ooh.
And so we're actually...
So rain good, but in this case, rain bad.
Well, and so we have to clean up some flood damage there, and so that set us back a couple of weeks. is going to cost a little bit of money to fix. But the contractor's amazing. We're cleaning it up, but we'll get back on schedule here pretty soon. So we're still looking at a completion date of next fall, which will be great because then the following spring we'll try to start filling that up. So we're very excited about that one. Our two drinking reservoirs, San Hollow and Quail, they're at the end of this, you know, coming into the new year, that are a very healthy level. We're very happy about that. Baker Reservoir actually spilled with these recent storms. Unfortunately, it brought down a lot of debris, and so it's pretty icky. It looks like ink almost. Gunlock actually went up quite a bit from these storms, but once again, we got a lot of debris and ash into that, and so...
Yeah, because of the burn scar, right? Forsyth fire, they called it. And I guess it brought a lot of debris to Pine Valley. They've actually closed the Pine Valley Recreation Area. You can't recreate there right now while they're cleaning that up.
And that's what we were so worried about, is a big rainstorm. And so right now we're evaluating how the fish are doing and what's going to happen with that. With Warner Valley Reservoir, we were on track to actually obtain title to that probably the end of this month, and then the government shut down.
Yeah, I love that. 22 days now.
So what we did is, so it's a three-way trade. So there's a private property owner that we have to buy his land, and that's what the BLM want, and that's why we call it land exchange. We did exercise that option because we felt so secure with what's going to happen. And so the district has purchased that land. It's the land in the HCP, the turtle habitat, because we felt so secure that it should be happening here shortly. So we've exercised that option, and once the government opens up again, we feel that we'll be able to get title to that land within about 30 days, which is only took 10 years.
Yeah.
A two-year process that took 10 years. Then that will be constructed just on a when-needed basis. And so...
Okay. But that sounds like there isn't really a target date then on that.
Not right now. Okay. And so we got to get a lot of our reuse up and going, certain pipelines installed. And then it depends a little bit on growth. The other one, right after Chief Toker Reservoir's that heavy construction completed, we're looking at going up on Kolob. We're doing an evaluation on that to see what will happen on Kolob Reservoir. Mm-hmm. We're actually up there doing some preliminary work right now on the spillway. So... what we're kind of looking there is how high we can raise it, how much, like do we raise it like 2 feet or 1 feet, or we could maybe up to 8 feet.
Wow.
So that's probably where you'd probably see the most construction. Cove Reservoir, the EIS is supposed to be coming out on that one here in the next, the first in the springtime.
Environmental impact study.
Yes. Yeah. Sorry.
We love our acronyms, right?
So hopefully that one, the document goes through smoothly and we can start construction on that next fall. So that would be good to get that under construction. And then of course, Graveyard. We are just waiting for one permit from the Army Corps of Engineers. So we've gotten a lot of permits, but we just need one more. But unfortunately with the government shutting down, we're not able to get that permit.
They're all at home today.
So that's a project we have completely designed. The design has been reviewed and analyzed by the state safety dam engineer. He's approved it. We're in the final process of purchasing the last little private in holdings that we need to get. And then we just have to get a piece of paper. It's all funded. We got the money sitting there. They have not selected a contractor yet because we don't do that until we get all the pieces of paper. And
I was looking on a map at the graveyard wash where it will be proposed, mm-hmm. to where it will be is not really Santa Clara, not St. George. Is it county land right now?
Right now it's in the unincorporated county. Yeah. But if you look at the annexation plan, it would be within Santa Clara's.
I was going to say it looks like Santa Clara. Yeah.
And so I know they've kind of talked about what, you know, would they want to annex it now or what they might want to do with it. Either way, it doesn't really affect us.
Will that reservoir be kind of a recreation area for people too? Will there be swimming and a beach and stuff, or is it not really that kind of reservoir?
Right now, we don't have any plans showing recreation around that reservoir.
Okay.
So, but I don't know what will happen in the future, but right now we don't show any plans around that. If recreation was to occur on that reservoir, like if they wanted to go and build like campgrounds or anything, they would whoever it is, they would have to go back to the BLM and get permission to do that. Because right now our current permits with the BLM does not incorporate like trails and stuff like that. So
what about fish and fishing?
Right now, we're not planning, like, since there's not recreation, we're not planning to, like, plant or put fish in there. Okay. But I will tell you, it would actually be a pretty good little fishing reservoir.
It kind of sounds cool, yeah.
So we'll see what happens in the future. And so that I will tell you that happens a lot where, like, we'll build reservoirs because we only care about the water. And then somebody's like, hey, can we do something? And, I mean, if you look at the old, like, when Quail Reservoir was built or Sand Hollow, it was kind of like, yeah, we're building this reservoir. And then somebody's like, hey, can I water ski on that?
Yeah.
And so what we did, the district at that time, it's like, we don't want to get involved in that business.
It's not our thing, yeah.
Utah State Parks here. And it's been it's number one revenues grossing state park is Sand Hollow. They make millions off of it. And they actually use money from Sand Hollow to subsidize a lot of the other state parks that don't make money.
And the Conservancy District gets none of that money.
We don't get a dime.
No. Huh. That doesn't seem fair.
Well, State Parks is a great partner. They help manage it. They do a lot of things. And so
what you get is them kind of taking care of it.
Yeah. So if somebody calls me up and they're really mad about somebody, and this actually happened, somebody skinny dipping. I was like, it's not my deal. Call State Parks. I don't want,
to get pictures. No, I'm just kidding.
And I was like, listen, it's just not my thing.
Yeah.
Call State Parks. They're managing it. They're in control. They're there. They'll respond. And every time we've gone to State Parks and said, hey, we have an issue with water or anything like that, they've always been excellent response. So even though they're making money off of this, they really do provide us a service, and it's been a good partnership.
That's because I was going to ask about that, because we have all the different reservoirs, and they've turned into what they've turned, you know, Quail Lake. Not really a swimming reservoir. I mean, it's available, but it's more of a fishing and boating reservoir. And you guys have nothing to do with that kind of stuff. You're just we need the water. That's all we want.
Yeah. And our thing with state parks is we just want to protect the water. And so we'll go to state parks every once in a while and say, we need to, because that's our drinking water.
Yeah.
And so it's like, hey, we need you to do or monitor or do certain things to protect the water. And like I said, they've always been really good.
And what do you mean by protect the water? What would be harmful to it?
So if somebody puts, let's say they're filling up a jet ski and all of a sudden that 5 gallon of water, gasoline drops into the lake.
Okay.
So you're like, 5 gallons of gasoline in that big reservoir, dilute it. But our testing on our system is so sensitive. If you had 1 million gallons of water and you put 1 drop of gasoline in there, we could probably pick that up.
Wow.
And so that's why I say it's really nice to have state parks. They have rangers there that respond. Whenever there's like big events, they handle all that. And so it has been good.
There was last year a diesel that crashed into, I think it was Pine Valley Reservoir, one of those up north. You're saying that would be a pretty big deal.
That would be a massive deal. That would freak us out. And so, you know, one of the things that, talking about this relationship, when a boat sinks in Sand Hollow, one of the things that we're really concerned about is that boat has gasoline.
Right.
And so our search and rescue, they do a really good job of bringing those backs up and helping us contain anything that goes on there.
Hopefully it's a closed system and you can get the boat back up and the gas is still in the boat and everything's going to be okay.
Or if there's, yeah. And so we just, and the reason why, not because we're like jerks about it. Our job is to provide safe, reliable drinking water, and we want to be able to provide the safest, reliable drinking water to the county. And those reservoirs were built solely for drinking water. They weren't built for water skiing.
Right.
They weren't built for anything else.
A lot of people think otherwise, but you're right.
And in a lot of states, they ban recreation on their drinking reservoirs.
Hmm.
And so a long time ago, we took the approach of saying, listen, if we can manage these effectively and protect them, then we can probably do both. And that's what we've done and we'll continue to do.
Very, very interesting. By the way, folks, Chief Toker will not be a motorboat reservoir.
No. But it'll be a paddleboard like a little canoe. Yeah. It'll be perfect for that.
There won't be any water skiing on Chief Toker.
No, and like Co-op's kind of the same way. You can have a little tiny under 10 horsepower motor on there to go fishing and stuff.
Yeah.
But yeah, and so there's reasons why. Like, you don't want a jet ski or motorboat on like Co-op.
No. Yeah. Zach, believe it or not, we've used up our time. Again, appreciate you coming in. It's been a lot of fun.
No, it's been good.
We've become friends over the years, and I really appreciate it. Anybody that saw us standing next to each other, I'm 6'5", 300 pounds. He's probably, what,
5'6".
5'6", and less than 300 by a lot. So.
Buck 30.
Yeah. Really?
Yeah.
Wow. Carrie, what is he doing? I guess it's the 8 miles running without realizing it.
But it's been fun. Good luck.
Zach, thank you so much for all the time you've come on here. I will not be here next month when you're on, but we will make sure someone is and we'll get it covered.
Come up to us and see us anytime.
I will, for sure. And Desert Gardens again, Halloween displays now. And then after Halloween's over, then we go into the Christmas lights and everything. It's going to be very fun. So thank you, Zach. I'm off tomorrow and Friday. We'll see everybody on Monday.